Evening at the Movies is a proud member of the I Did Not Make These Rankings podcast network. Other shows in the network include Masturbators, The Sip List, Crushgasm, Love is Black, Men Are the Prize, Crime Rewind, and Literature Reapers. You can find out all about our shows and more at IDNMTRpodcastnetwork.com. Happy listening. You are now entering the world of a movie review. A world full of drama, joy, ridicule, movie spoilers, unpopular opinions, and adult humor for as far as the eye can see. Welcome to An Evening at the Movies.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to your favorite movie-based podcast. This is An Evening at the Movies. I am the incredible, good-looking, smart, awesome host, Casey. And as you all know, this is the podcast where we eat the stale popcorn, drink the watered-down sodas, and discuss all of our favorite movies and why we love them unless it's rubber and then we don't love it. But I am happy, beyond all happy, for several reasons tonight, though. One main one, but the even more main than the main one, is the fact that my co-host is back with us tonight. Welcome back, co-host.
Thanks for having me. Glad to be here, even though I sound like I smoke 27 packs a day right now. I'm broken.
I mean, come on. You can be a little bit more open with the truth. You smoke 37 packs of cigarettes a day.
Absolutely. That's what you're selling.
I'm kidding. You are awesome and you are suffering the remnants of a flu that hopefully will be gone sooner rather than later.
Yeah.
And we won't get into the other stuff you're suffering from because me and our other person is joining us. Yeah, me and the other person that's joining us tonight have already beat that dead horse a lot with our recording last week.
I'm in pain.
We are not taking pleasure in the fact that you are in pain. But with all that said, though, if you were here for the anniversary episode, we are joined by another very special person who I'm sure will grace us with literally one word as soon as I say his name. He is back. He is awesome. We're all awesome. We're all incredible. But he is Chance the Rapper himself. Chanty Greif is here with us.
Hello.
Well, that's not the word he normally says.
He threw me off. That's it. Oh, we're just going rogue up in this motherfucker. Okay.
I was about 10 seconds from pulling an Alfred Hitchcock and going, oh, good evening.
I'm knocking. That almost would have been fucking priceless. But so, as I said, there is a main reason why we are all here today. And I'm not going to lie. I'm impressed with the number I'm seeing on the freaking live indicator at the top of the screen right now.
We got five share people. It in the groups. Although technically somebody else is recording right now, so maybe we shouldn't try to compete with them. Or maybe we should.
I'm just in it. I'm in it to win it. I'm in it for the biscuit. I don't know. I got nothing for that.
Hello, Harley.
What's up?
Hi, Harley. And,
let's see. I've got a hi from a Facebook user.
Hi. Somebody really must have wanted that hi. That's Casey. Hi, Raxus.
Girl Casey says hi.
Girl Casey says hi.
I'm assuming I know who I know who this next comment is from because Amanda and I have heard this phrase a lot, especially during our draft episodes.
Do it.
Hi, Harvey. The next Facebook user is I'm here for it.
I'm here for it.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking A, man.
I'll let StreamYard access your name. Thanks, girl, Casey. GC?
Yes.
Oh. All right. Hey, what's up?
Oh, people? Okay. Well, it's Girl Casey again. So it's all Girl Casey. No Harvey. But I digress. So I'm literally not sure how to share from my phone.
You have to do it from Facebook. It's okay, I did.
Yeah, okay. It's all good.
Either way, there is streams out there that obviously at least Girl Casey is watching and probably Harley as well, but so I digress. The main reason why, well, there's two reasons why we're here. We're going to talk about a movie here in a minute, but there's the fact that we're going to talk about a movie surprises you.
Yeah. Nobody told me we were doing that.
Oh, well, I hope it's a movie you've seen enough that you've seen enough and have memorized then, because if you haven't done your homework, I guess you're not going to have a whole hell of a lot to talk about.
No homework necessary for this one.
I didn't think so. Kind of sort of along the lines why I think as a group we decided to do this episode. But so I'm going to step out on a crackling tree branch and let the world know. It kind of sort of was discussed in the anniversary episode. It definitely got brought up when we recorded the not yet released Jessica Biel style Texas Chainsaw Massacre episode. But we are here as a group to officially let everybody know that there is a new, I guess you could say, I was going more along the lines of kind of sort of an evening at the movies spinoff underneath the umbrella of an evening at the movies. Basically, what you are looking at.
A new segment.
Yeah, it's a new segment. It all fits under the idea of evening at the movies. Like how at one point Freddie and I had talked last year about doing the recasting call under the umbrella of an evening at the movies. He's off doing the recasting call on his own now. But, you know, we do our own version of the recasting under our umbrella as well. But this little venture, you have one person and then two peoples and then three peoples who are officially your horror squad from now until the end of time. So if you know anything about the three of us, you know good and hell well that out of almost everybody that's been on the show, we probably have the biggest amount of horror knowledge out of everybody. The only people that I think might challenge us on that might be Meg and Kelly.
Oh yeah, but they write books about it for a living.
That's my whole point though, is like they, with their whole science of monsters and women in horror, Stephen King, blah 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 blah, they've done copious amounts of knowledge or research. Well, I mean,
I would also postulate that Andrew would also be a contender as well.
Oh yeah, that too.
Well, I technically have not yet recorded with Andrew, and
touché.
I mean, initially the idea was we had invited Andrew to be here for this episode, but he's also recording on a different podcast right now. To quote Forrest Gump, that's all I have to say about that right now.
That's cool.
So
you were showing me a shirt earlier. I got a question.
Yes.
Did you get that from Coach Snyder?
Fuck you and your reference to Nightmare on the Street Part 2. Asshole. I hate that movie.
You love it, don't lie.
Not that movie, I don't.
As soon as I saw that, I was like, Coach Snyder.
Fancy is making reference to the ill-fated Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, Freddy's Revenge. which is not a good movie. And I think at least two of the people in this group would agree with me. Well, I would be one of them, and the other one.
Yeah, you can't agree with yourself and count yourself twice.
I can agree with myself if I want to. I am that cool.
Well, yeah. But...
So, I have rambled on in my introduction long enough. Amanda, would you like to, because it's your number one movie, like to let the listeners know what we're talking about tonight?
Sure. We are here, the Horror Squad members, for our first official meeting to discuss the 1978 John Carpenter classic, Halloween.
Yay! Sir, you don't need to start lying to the audience in our first episode now. Come on.
Oh, it's all factual.
You better shut up. Katie and I will fucking destroy you.
First of all, Chansey doesn't have a mean bone in his body. The only person in Chansey's house that I'm afraid of is girl Casey. And that's all I have to say about that.
I don't Second blame of you all, there.
You're just still angry over the fact that CJ shit all over Halloween during our bracket review show earlier today.
I don't give zero fucks what CJ thinks. Love you, CJ.
Well, I know you don't.
I don't care.
So, like Amanda said, though, Halloween, released on December 25th, 1978, directed by John Carpenter, had a $325,000 budget, made over $70 million at the box office. If you have not seen this movie yet, for one, shame the fuck on you, because even though it is the number two greatest horror franchise of all time, it's still very worthy of you seeing. So if you haven't, we highly recommend you rush over to Shudder, AMC Plus, Fubo, or Plex and go check out the movie immediately. And somebody is saying, hey guys, whoever hey. It is.
Can I point out real quick before you move on from that budget? And I don't know if we were going to talk about this. First of all, $325,000 is not a lot of money, even in 1978. And the majority of that paid for Donald Pleasance and the Steadicam. So very little of that went to the rest of the production or even the other actors.
I would went. I don't know exactly what the number was that Donald Pleasance made for this movie, but I would wager a bet.
I think it was 40, I think.
Either way, it's still a large portion of freaking money. And Facebook user is Tony from the Pod Guys podcast, who I was actually on their show last Monday night. And oh my God, we talked literally about all kinds of Stephen King books, movies, Dracula, everything for the better part of what, 2.5 hours?
Well, that's great.
It was, it made me reminisce and remember the days of you and I doing sip list episodes about Friends and How I Met Your Mother in the beginning.
Oh, nice.
And we literally rambled for 4.5 hours. So, but yes. And always, you guys have been here enough. You guys know the game. I'm pretty sure you both know what the number is, but Chansey, would you like to defend your spot on the damn nose guess for what the Rotten Tomato score is for Halloween?
You know that, like, it's super successful, but I mean, horror always gets shit on, and every time I say that, I'm always fucking wrong.
I know something you don't know.
I'm going to go like, I'm going to go with a 10% range here. All right. I'm going to go
your bet.
I'm going to go 85 to 95.
Okay.
That's exactly around what I was going to say, too. If you think about it now, like if there had been Rotten Tomatoes in 1978 when it came out, it would have been like, you know, 15% because people hated it at first.
Oh, they fucking shit on it.
I think the audience score is going to be around 90%.
I didn't look up what the audience score is, but you both, because of your 10% safety bet, were off by 1%.
Oh, yeah?
96%.
Oh, that's gotta be the audience score. That can't be the tomato meter.
I was going to say, no, I thought it was
the tomato meter.
Oh, really?
I honestly, when he said we were one off, I figured it was 84.
Well, we both have been around, or all three of us have been around long enough to know that, Rotten Tomatoes generally is not favorable to horror, even if it is a great horror movie like this movie, who, even though I will die on the hill that I still think it's the number two greatest horror franchise of all time, but that's not the point. Even the fact that it got a 96 says a lot, and I'm surprised it got a 96, honestly, because horror movies don't ever get the credit that they deserve. So,
yeah.
I would agree with the fact that Rotten Tomatoes is a crazy biased system that is paid off by Hollywood.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
probably.
Amanda, what do we say in the I Did Not Make These Rankings podcast network?
Fuck Rotten Tomatoes.
In the ass without lube.
It looked like you had to read it. It looked like you had to look down at a legal pad. You had that wrote down. I'm like, wait, I got it wrote down somewhere. What it is? What did we say? We say the thing? Yeah.
I mean, I am excited to get to the end of the episode and see if Amanda remembers her one line.
I remember all my lines. I'm a student of the theater.
a true thespian.
I am.
So, which one of you would like, or both of you, if you want, would like to wager an attempt at a plot summary for our amazing listeners?
Okay, your call, Amanda. This is kind of, I mean,
let you do it.
So, fuck it. All right. Yeah. Makes sense. All right. So check it, y'all. This is a fucking movie about a long time ago. That's what I get for reading while I'm talking. A long time ago, the 6-year-old kid, for reasons that will forever remain unknown.
Yeah.
Killed his sister. They then lock him up for 15, 16 years, something like that.
15 years.
Yeah, 15 years. And then on Halloween Eve, he breaks out of the jail. Well, the institution anyway. And then he steals a car and drives back to the town, where he comes across, you know, the protagonist of the film, Jamie Lee Curtis, and her character, Laurie Strode, and her two friends who are basically just going to die, so we just don't care about them. They don't matter. And, you know, scary horror movie stuff abounds. He's over here. He's over there. There's a guy standing there talking to the motherfucking sheriff, and he drives by. We'll get to that. And then, you know, he follows him around. He finds out, oh, hey, this is where they are. I'm going to kill these fucking people. And he starts doing so. And then, you know, final girl fight. He shoots him 6 times. And then that's it. And that's it. That's the end. That's all we got.
I mean,
that's a quick synopsis.
Probably not Chancey's greatest plot synopsis that he's ever given.
And no, definitely not.
I've gotten a whole lot of the whole, I'm not happy with how this is going with his plot summaries the last few episodes that he's been on.
Nobody so, what? Better than me.
The last few suck. The last few
I just suck at it. Song. I just suck at it.
No, you don't.
I really do. I just suck at it. I'm more excited. I'm more excited to actually get in to this quarter page of notes and materials. I went scientific as fuck. Okay.
So, okay. Before we get into your quarter page of notes.
Okay.
I want to pose a deeply emotionally resonating question to all of us.
Okay.
And just to make sure that we have it out there for the listeners to fully comprehend. What is everybody's opinion on the Bloodline storyline for this franchise? Do you prefer a Bloodline storyline, or do you prefer John Carpenter's vision of the story?
You can go ahead and go first, Amanda.
I don't like it.
Well, that was nice, sweet, and to the point.
Well, I mean, it makes a bunch of movies, but it's dumb. It totally takes away from what the point of Michael Myers was in this movie.
Hmm.
It's what sets Michael apart from the other killers is we don't know why he does what he does. There's no method to his madness. And so to give him a reason is kind of like humanizing him. And I didn't like that.
You know, that's a valid argument. I'm more indifferent, mostly just because I enjoyed the films for what they are, minus one in particular. But like, I really was okay when they did the you know, the three there, the most recent remake.
Yeah.
With it not being a Bloodline thing. I was okay with that.
Yeah, no, I'm okay with that trilogy for that reason. There's other we three have had this discussion about my feelings on most of that trilogy.
Yeah.
And we can get to that when we get to the Blumhouse trilogy down the road, because I really don't feel like rehashing false advertisement again already.
We ain't here to talk about that.
Yeah, no, we're talking about that. We're talking about the original.
We're here to talk about great Halloween movies.
That's right.
Not things that were promised to be great, but then crap the bed. So, I'm in the same bit. I mean, to me, the whole Bloodline storyline to me simplifies the story way too much than it needs to be. And it takes out the psychologically puzzling aspect of the story, because in 78, you're left to wonder why this, why that, you know, these things aren't adding up, but yet you have this great significant evil that is stalking this town and a couple of babysitters and a drunk blonde girl that wants to get laid. So? Totally. And to me, the fact that you don't know, and Amanda hit on it too, that you don't know his motives is what makes the story that much more creepy.
Yeah.
So, all right. So with all of that aside, I won't speak for the other two members of the Horror Squad, but I'll say this. I personally won't shame the listeners if they are fans of the Bloodline storyline.
No.
It's just not what we prefer from our story.
I enjoyed it.
Well, you're fucking wrong. I'll say
that's fine. I will shame you. That's okay.
I mean, it's not the first time that I've shamed you over a movie in this franchise again, and that will come up when we get to Blumhouse trilogy.
We'll get there.
Way down the road. We still have to get through, you know, Resurrection and Rob Zombies and Spirit Horses again.
Yeah. I don't want to do those.
That's the fact that literally Chansey begrudgingly said that says a lot, because Chansey's a huge fucking horror fan. We all are huge horror fans. Chansey loves amazingly bad horror movies, though.
That's true.
So the fact that he's like, I don't want to do it, says a lot about those movies. So, all right. I don't know what the hell Chansey's 8/4 of a page of notes is all about. So I'm just going to not even bother segueing with a question. I'm just going to, the microphone is yours, sir. What do you want to talk about?
Well, we may as well start off with the start off. Cause I mean, that single shot, opening shot, fucking amazing. Steady especially cam. With the, with the utilization of the Steadicam. And herein comes my scientific data statistics.
Okay. I believe we talked about the point of view cam last week, didn't we, sir?
I believe we did.
I won't go too far into that because technically that episode doesn't come out for another few weeks. So you're going to have to wait on that one. But know that some of what Chansey just said, we did discuss and we'll be discussing in a couple weeks on An Evening at the Movies as well. All right. Scientific.
Okay. So aside from the greatness of that opening shot, which it's great. Okay. So here's where the science and shit comes into play. Anybody ever notice that, you know, everything that took place at the beginning of that movie took place really fucking fast?
Yeah. It's the fastest like, ever.
Like, we're talking 1 minute and 8 seconds from lights out to I gotta go, all right? It took Michael 38.2 seconds for him to get upstairs and into Judith's room, okay? 20.1 seconds for him to get downstairs. So let's go ahead and argue that old boy that was in the room left with the rapidity that Michael left in. So we're going to use the 20.1 seconds, okay? So you got 68 seconds minus 20.1 seconds is 47.89 seconds. I'll give roughly, 7.89 seconds, 7 to 8 seconds worth to get undressed and get going. And probably a good 10-second walk because, she was talking to him the whole way, basically being like, hey, you're going to call me, right? So that literally narrows it down to a 30-second wet window. I'm honestly surprised that fucking Judith didn't kill this motherfucker out of sheer disappointment.
It was the 70s. We didn't know we were allowed to care about our pleasure then.
That is exactly 1/4 page worth of notes. I had a stopwatch. I'm like, bam, bam, bam. I was a forensic detective on that shit.
Yeah, that was some of the shortest sex ever.
I'm not going to lie. That is totally not what I was expecting you to come up with. You said something scientific, and I'm like trying to figure out in my little pea brain, what exactly are you talking? There's not a whole hell of a lot of scientific elements to this movie.
Science!
I mean, I've got a lot of stuff. I've got some things that science proves could clearly never happen. Like, we're gonna assume that Michael could deadlift a 1-ton pound of cement, carry it from the cemetery to the car, from the car to the top stairs in the bedroom, with nobody seeing him, by the way, and all by himself. Come on.
Well, right? Okay, because literally that thought popped into my head when we were doing our watch party the other day.
And Loomis and the caretaker are walking up to the gravesite, and it dawned on me because I remember how big that headstone is. And literally for him to take and steal the tomb, he's got to wrap his arms around it, like bear hug it, and literally like deadlift it straight up out of the ground. And I'm not 100% expert on it, but those things don't just barely go into the ground either. They go deep. So you got to lift it like way the hell up to get it out of the damn ground.
And all that with his asthma and no albuterol.
I've always wanted to know one thing, though, since we're talking about that scene in particular. What the fuck did old Charlie do with that hacksaw?
Right? Why can we never find out?
For fuck's sake, man. Inquiring minds must know.
Even in the
novel, every time,
I don't think we get the end of that story.
He's like, so he goes out to the garage, gets himself a hacksaw. Just all non-fucking plus. Just do. Goes in. And then fucking Loomis just fucking cock blocks us out of a good story arc.
Like, literally, like, can we just get to the damn, oh, yeah, I mean, blah, 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 blah. Goddamn kid. Blah, 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 blah. And, yeah. And scene.
I mean, I think you got to think, since he said it reminded him of Charlie, that Charlie kissed his wife and kids goodbye and then went and hacked off his sister's head. I mean, I don't know.
Or maybe it was like, you know, maybe it was like Amityville Horror and he fucking gave them a little bit of the get got.
Exactly. It could be. You know, that may have been a good question for somebody who got to see John Carpenter almost a year ago.
I wasn't allowed to ask questions. It was like, it was a very
move it along
machine of, he asks your name, he signs the thing, you say thank you and goodbye. I did give him a card for my podcast, but I got there at the end of the day. He was tired.
Okay. So I don't believe I saw the actual picture in your picture album on Facebook this morning. But Amanda actually does have a picture of him clearly overwhelmingly exhausted. He's like sitting in his chair with his head back. Like, he looks like he's fucking passed out from.
Oh, I have it on Instagram. I'll send it to you. I didn't put it in that Facebook album because I felt kind of bad for him.
Well, you kind of sort of got him at an inopportune moment.
Yeah, it's a.
And I'm sure
it should be time, a meme, though. It's a whole mood.
Well, and like you and I discussed at one point too, it's like he obviously was at the tail end of a very long weekend because if I remember correctly, he was there the whole weekend.
Yeah.
It so
was Saturday night.
And he's not a young man anymore.
No.
So.
Oh.
Okay, so
I'll have to find it.
I feel like this is a good question to ask the female portion of our group, because as we all know, it is her absolute number one favorite movie of all time. But what about this movie was it that absolutely captivated you as a impressionable young child?
Oh, I mean, it scared the shit out of me. I mean, I saw this when I was 5 years old because I'm Gen X and our parents didn't care what the fuck we watched. Plus, it was my mom's favorite horror movie, so it was always on, even after it scared me so bad that even hearing her watch it, I would like freak out and cry and be like, oh my God. But then I would also still like try to watch it during the day or when it was on TV because it's just like, I don't know. It's been a part of my life for my entire life. Could not watch it alone at night until I was well into my 20s. It's the simplicity. It's the tension building and how just And I mean simple in a good way, not in a bad way. It's just so fucking simple. And it's so scary. It really grabs your attention and it's just like... I mean, it's literally all lighting and music and jump scares. And it sucks you in. And it's great.
And that theme music by the Bowling Green Philharmonic Orchestra are fucking literally where it's at.
John Carpenter writing that score, damn.
But like, yeah, I mean, literally everything she said covers me for my reasoning. It really was an awesome score.
Yeah.
And it really just goes back to that simplicity. You know, just fucking that's three notes. Do 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 fucking and then just
even that the majority fucking, of that main theme is what, six notes?
Yeah, but
whatever. I mean, I don't know what the official is, but obviously the thing
about it is that it's what is it like? Oh crap! What's the word? It's the crap. I'll come up with it. Go ahead.
Okay. For me, it was like you know, obviously the music played a lot with it because, like, you know, the simplicity of the notes plus the length of time in which notes were held. Yeah. It felt very, I guess, dissonant and unnatural. Donald fucking Pleasance, man, like he fucking could have just phoned it in. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. It is what makes it feel the way that Chancey just said. It's the timing, but I couldn't remember what the actual. It's five-fourths time.
Yeah, 5/4. Yeah.
So it's too fast. So it's like ahead of time.
I had a feeling that's where you were going, but I couldn't remember what.
Yeah. Anyway.
Yes. No, you're good. And then, like I said, Donald Pleasance could have phoned it in and just got paid, but he fucking brought it and just his, like, everything, like, especially down to the last part that you see him in where he's looking and he just knew.
Yep.
And then, like, you know, going back to, like, okay, but there are, I do have my qualms, but they're like, you know, they're funny little ha-has more so than like, this is fucking totally ruining the movie experience for me. Except for the fucking part where he drove by. Like, that gets me. While we're at it.
Speed kills.
No, I'm talking like when fucking, well, first off, before we even talk about that specific scene, how fucking bad is this cop, eh? Like, they were just totally blasting a joint in the car. listening to fucking Don't Fear the Reaper. Then they pull up on her dad, who leans into the car. Hey, for fuck's sake. He's just, you know, hey kids, how's it going? Fucking blah, blah, blah. Oh, you know, this guy walks up. Oh, by the way, you got a fucking murderer walking around or whatever. Da 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 da. He's like, all right, I'll be done in a minute. Just fucking stay here. I'll be right back.
Doesn't tell him that first.
He'd been calling. He's been calling. He's been calling steady calling.
That's true.
And then he stands there and does the goddamn John Travolta Pulp Fiction meme where he's like, and in the time for him to do that, you see him pull up to the fucking intersection, first off. He's standing there talking to the guy. And at first, you know, you could be like, oh, he was blocking the sun, which obscured Donald Pleasance's vision of the fucking intersection. Okay, yeah, that's valid. But he takes his fucking hand down. And you could clearly see him sitting at the stop sign. How does he know how to operate the stop sign? Then, fucking, he does... That. He does the fucking John Travolta thing, and in the time it takes him to go from this side to this side, old boy does a quick fucking turn and just goes right on by for official use only. Like, there's a man in a gray station wagon with a sign on the side that says, for official use only, wearing a funny ass mask. Like, for fuck's sake. It may have been the 70s. Well, no, never mind. It was 70s, probably. Nobody gave a shit. But that's like, yeah. That's the only part. That was the only part that it was always like, God, well, damn it.
I mean, let's be honest. Freaking Sheriff Brackett probably was smoking as much weed as his daughter and Lori were.
Fucking new fanfic. Sheriff Brackett was the plug.
I'm not going to deny it.
I think he's handicapped by natural naivete.
That's true.
Probably parents in the 70s probably didn't give that many fucks. So there is that element as well. But I'll definitely agree with the fact that, and I'll even spread it out to, that's probably one of the main reasons why I like the original aspects of all the main horror movies from when we were kids, like Halloween, Nightmare on Elm Street, Friday the 13th, even Jaws, where they weren't that complex with all of whatever they were trying to accomplish. They were all, I mean, okay, Nightmare on Elm Street probably had a little bit more to it because of the whole Johnny Depp death scene. But other than that,
Tina's death was pretty bloody.
Oh, I think he was talking about like the complexity.
Oh, sorry.
Like the whole, the way that they had to do the upside down room and everything bolted down, and yeah, how they created, well, the whole
him, and then him doing the thing when he's chasing Tina, when he's got his arms all across the entire alley.
Well, I could practice.
I mean, that. Yeah, that would have been a difficult practical effect to pull off without, you know, looking hokey.
Yeah.
Wait.
But then at the same time, like even Toby's magnum opus, the TCM-1, had a lot of practicality to it as well, where it wasn't a lot of over-the-top special effects. It wasn't slapping you in the face, paintbrush style, with all the gore and the blood and all of that. You know, there's something very psychological about the way all this violence and death and everything is achieved in these movies without necessarily having to go all the way with showing you every damn aspect of it.
I mean, there's literally, I feel like when you, either way it's fake, but when you're watching a movie and you see someone get killed, you're like, oh my God, that's so fake. When you don't see it, it's like your mind goes to what's probably happening. And when you don't see it, you have to imagine it. And a lot of times that's scarier because it feels more real than watching what you know is a fake death on screen versus imagining what happened, or, you know, like not seeing the blood. I mean, I love that there's almost zero amount of blood in this movie. There's only like two parts.
Yeah.
It's great. And you don't think that's what you're going to get, because in the beginning you get Judith getting stabbed in the tits and blood everywhere. But even then, it's not a lot of blood. It's not distasteful. But beyond that, and then you got the guy, the mechanic guy. But other than that, I don't think there's any blood in the movie.
Just the spot where she gets hit in the arm before she goes over.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
And by the way, and I did bring this up during our watch party as well. I am not going to lie. When she went over the fucking railing after he freaking sliced her arm open, how in the hell did she get up and walk away from that?
I don't know. I don't know if she can crack her skull. Because she adrenaline. Didn't fall down the stairs, really. She went, I mean, yes, she fell down the stairs, but it was more like the way they showed it, she went over the railing.
And right, but that's
hit the stairs, and it was like,
but that's what broke her leg or her ankle for the second movie. So like she up over, landed on her feet, fucked up her ankle, and then slid down the stairs a little bit. So like she didn't really hit her head like directly. She bounced it going down, et cetera, et cetera. But like brings me back to my original thing. Why in the actual fuck was she in that goddamn room for as long as she was? Clear, like, you can look through the fucking, okay, like, I'll give her, she's got head fog because she just fell, you know, she did a double gainer, fucking ollie, triple no look, suicide dive over the fucking railing, but, like, you see the rake, and you're just like, I can't open the door, and then all of a sudden, he, like, one, he's just, like, single fist, like, fucking Mephisto, bam! And then he just fucking, I've got this fucking lock.
Okay.
Open, and then she's gone.
So here's what I'm going to say. I've said this before, I think I said it last night. And, you know, we're all kind of making fun. And I actually even have a blog post I wrote about, like, things about Halloween that just make no sense. But it's my favorite movie of all time.
But right.
The hero of this movie is Laurie Strode's vagina. Her untouched hymen is the hero of this movie. I guess we can get into it about how, you know, this isn't what they were trying to do, but we have the rules. Laurie Strode only survived because she's a virgin, because she makes bad decision after bad decision in this movie. And you think she's not going to, because she's hyper aware that something's happening. You know, John Carpenter said, these kids aren't dying because they're promiscuous. They're dying because they're not paying attention. Because they're focused on getting laid. But Laurie right. wasn't paying attention. She knew something was going on.
It literally goes back to that morning, her sitting in English class and, you know, noticing out the corner of her eye that official business only station wagon yeah. parked outside the damn school.
Yeah, so it's like, why? You're paying attention to your instincts all day and you're on alert. And then as soon as you get into fight or flight, you make the most goddamn ridiculous decisions that anybody would make. If she were a virgin, she would have been killed. So her vagina is the hero, not her. I like
that. I mean, that's a valid statement.
Any of the documentaries you watch, you guys have probably heard this story when they did the audience, the first screening, they went in and watched it with the audience. And there were people like screaming, don't throw that knife down again, you bitch.
Yeah.
Laurie, come on. Oh, I apologize to everybody. I sound like shit. I'm sorry.
No, you sound fine. And we can't do this without you anyway. So you're here for the long haul. But I promise, because of, you know, the fact you don't feel well, we won't go as horribly long this episode as we probably would have if you were feeling healthy.
Yeah, I'm not feeling great, but I'm not.
So, well, I think we kind of started without even addressing the question, brought up, you know, aspects of the movie that we didn't particularly care for. So I don't feel like there's a need to necessarily go that direction with the question.
Well, I have one more, but we can talk about it whenever.
Okay. Well, go ahead and spit it out, and we will dissect the answer.
Michael Myers' fucking parents. When he walks out, at least the dad's like, Michael, takes the mask off and is just looking at him. And I, the thing about that shot is I get they were trying to do it for dramatic effect, that he's just standing there. The parents are just standing there. Okay, the dad's fine. The mom looks bored as fuck. She's just looking down at him. She shoves her hands in her cardigan pockets. She doesn't look concerned or worried at all. If my kid was holding a bloody knife, I would lose my shit. Like, my six-year-old's holding a bloody knife, she did not look bothered in the slightest. It almost looks like she's thinking, oh, fuck, who did Michael kill this time?
Well, I mean, I'll say this.
I'm so bored.
When Danielle Harris shows up at the top of the stairs at the end of Halloween 4 with the bloody scissors, and Loomis's reaction to that was probably a lot more genuine than what the parents' reaction in 1978 was.
That was too over the top. I laughed my ass off. No.
I love when he goes to try and shoot her. He's like, I'm gonna fucking do it.
Well, I mean,
so, like,
Pleasance had some very amazing
moments linguistically in this franchise, like the now, or the I shot him six times.
I shot him six times. I shot him in the heart. But like
he's definitely the king of overacting in this franchise.
Not in this one, though.
Yeah, not in this one. Definitely not in this one.
No, but he pulled off the creepy freaking stalker in the bushes when the kids are
approaching. Lonnie, get your ass away from there.
He looks so pleased with himself too, and then Brackett scares the shit out of him. I love how proud of himself he looks when he scares those kids.
Yeah, these kids are what, like 7 years old, 8 years old, and he's like, I just scared a 7 year old kid. And then all of a sudden he gets scared by the fucking popo.
Okay, go ahead, Casey, with your next question or whatever.
No, I didn't have any more. I was hoping to God you guys had other stuff that we needed to make sure that got covered before we moved on to our, what I'm sure is going to amount to very predictable ratings for the movie.
So what do you think? Okay. What was I going to say? Okay. Never mind. I lost my train of thought. Can we talk about the best character in the movie for a second? Lindsay fucking Wallace.
She was a gangster.
She has zero fucks to give about anything, and I love it. She lets the phone ring for 10 minutes. She's like, hello. And she's like, tell her it's me. Okay. Click.
Just fucking hangs right up. Like, yeah, fucking whatever. She doesn't even go. She's just like, hey, this guy called.
And then when they get back in, she's stuck in the window. She'll be right here. And then just hands her
right
all smugly. Oh my God, I love that kid.
I mean, she probably had zero, or she probably had more fucks to give in the Blumhouse portion of the stories than she did in Carpenter's Vision. But yeah,
like after the boogie,
she's a fucking badass. I'm not going to, out of the whole damn franchise, Lindsay and what's his face? Shut up, Dave.
Yes.
Dave
has such a fucked up face.
Probably my two favorite characters in the whole entire 18 movie franchise.
Yeah. Julian was great.
Shut up, Dave.
Send Dave first.
I mean, literally, like, Amanda and I have had conversations before where we get to that point where one of us says something and the other one will respond with, shut up, Dave.
It works.
It does work. It's a beautifully simple line. That's the beauty of this whole franchise, though, is how simplistic it is. It doesn't have to go over the top and be, you know, everything CGI, blah, 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 and all that. It works with being incredibly practical.
Right. So I bought the 25th anniversary edition of this movie, and it's the one that has the TV made for TV clips in it.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, I've got that on right now, but it's about to the part with Tommy and his rambling that nobody could ever understand.
Where you mean
I'm telling you what's
happening?
I didn't need to turn on the quotes. Yeah, yeah, and I'm telling you, I almost think that at the very beginning he fucked up and said, Jamie, the boogeyman. I saw the boogeyman. He's outside. I saw the boogeyman. He's outside. Yeah, go and look.
Yeah, I don't know. We need a special interpreter for that gibberish.
Chancey might actually be right now that I think about it.
Maybe.
I almost want to go back and rewatch the movie again just to see if
I rewound it so many times because I was like six I was transcribing times. It. Yes, six times. I was transcribing it, so I'd rewind it and I'd recontinue to transcribe it when I sent that message when we were watch partying it. Dude, I backed it up so many times that we actually were like, you guys ended up being like a few seconds ahead of me because I had started it ahead of you guys.
Here, I'm if I could turn on the subtitles while you guys are talking. Let's see if I can figure it out and see what
it'll probably just say Tommy mumbles.
Probably.
Unintelligible yelling.
Yeah, yes, unintelligible screaming.
Of course it is. So, for the sake of Amanda's voice and health, Chance, did you have anything else you wanted to make sure we covered before we got to our reviews and ratings?
I mean, there's, you know, there's so many things that are said about all of the franchises, and they all have their pitfalls and their success stories.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, like, this movie did so much with so little.
Yeah.
It provided the fuel to air ratio for the entire slasher genre to like fucking ignite.
Yeah.
Like, negative, there was stuff before that.
Platter is full.
Yeah, he wasn't first, but he was definitely the blueprint for all the ones in the future.
He definitely opened up that flu, and the air just went in there, and it just fucking shit went up.
Yeah.
And, I will honest to God acknowledge that as being truth. Still doesn't change the fact that I still personally, for my own taste, will always put Nightmare on Elm Street one spot ahead of Halloween. But definitely I will never shit all over John Carpenter as being the man who walked so that people like Wes Craven and all of that could run.
Yeah.
For the longest time, I used to be much like Amanda, where like Halloween was my head and shoulders, you know, so far up above all the others. And then over time, as I just started to appreciate everything and taking it all in, like the other genre, or not the genres, the other franchises kind of lifted up and was like more of an equal status, like, you know, Hellraiser, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, stuff like that. Friday the 13th has always been a guilty pleasure of mine. Like, it's just one of those things. Like, I loved it. I loved it in Jason Goes to Hell. I loved it when they sent his ass to space. Fuck the remake.
Yeah.
Kill it with fire. Kill it with fucking fire. But, I mean, this movie, honestly, it changed a lot of the things that, because, like, I was always so used to like Alfred Hitchcock and the older style horror films. And then like, it was all really close together over the course of the summer, where it was like this movie, TCM. Well, technically it was this one, TCM 2, Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, all of it just all at once. And I was like, oh my God, there's so much here. And I was hooked. I was hooked.
The late 70s and early 80s for slasher cinema was that, what, 6 year, 7 year window of time where it was great to be a horror movie fan at that point.
Yeah.
Because even like the original couple Friday the 13th movies, the original Nightmare on Elm Street, Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Halloween, Drunken Halloween 2, even the whole idea of Season of the Witch, and I've shared my feelings numerous times on Season of the Witch, and we will get to that movie eventually down the road, but it was something different, and they were trying to reinvent the genre with something that hadn't been done before. And, you know, did it work? Some people say yes, some people say no. You know, it's all a matter of taste. But, you know, I don't hate that movie as much as I did growing up either, but you know, but that's the whole point though. Growing up in the 70s and 80s, it was a great time to be a horror movie fan. So
yeah,
it's one of those times that I wish we could go back and experience again. Maybe not as young as we were, but maybe as, you know, a late teenager, early 20s, and be able to come in with and experience the movies with what we know now and think about them from the perspective that, you know, an adult watching these movies when they came out. So
I don't know. I enjoyed having the ability to just reach out and just scoop it all in. Just scoop it all in. Cause like, I mean, you were talking about Nightmare on Elm Street. Like the first time I ever saw anything other than the first one was when I was in the hospital after having my tonsils taken out. They got 2, 3, and 4. And then the nurses brought in one of them little, you know, back when they had like TVs with VCRs for like board meetings and whatnot. They brought it in my room and played it.
The combos.
Yep. So I was able to watch, you know, Nightmare on Elm. I talked my parents into it. I was like, yeah, just go ahead and grab that. It'd be great. Then they did, because, you know, I had my tonsils out and I had complications and ended up having to be in the hospital for a week. But anyway, that doesn't matter. It's just like not having that accessibility to it all. I don't think I would have been able to maintain focus on it, because back then nobody really had the ability to like, oh, I'm going to come across this thing and then dive into lore or, you know, backstories or like in Clive Barker's case with Hellraiser, the books and, you know, like, just some of the crazy
Amanda's
things.
Amanda's favorite book.
Yeah, right? Go ahead.
I was just saying, there are, for anybody that's interested, and unfortunately now you can't get your hands on the early ones for less than like $100-$200, but all the Halloween movies have novelizations. So like the first one, basically, the guy got a copy of the unedited script and then he wrote a novel. But that one's actually where all the druid stuff comes from, is that the guy who wrote the first novel. But so I've read, I have, unfortunately, do not have a copy of the first one anymore, but I have a digital copy of it. But yeah, the books are good. Like the novelizations of the movies are really good.
Co-host?
Yeah.
When I figure out if I have to get a new computer or not, if I have to get a new one, can you send me a copy of that again?
Yeah.
Because my copy is on.
You guys want
one. Is on the old one.
And then I have a physical copy of 4. Oh, I have 1, 2, nice. And 3, the novelizations. On like, I have a digital copy, I have 4 in print, and they're all really good.
I actually would like to have the whole entire novelization set, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah. So,
I hate that I put it that way, but Amanda, would you like to go first on summing up your thoughts and giving the movie a rating?
Sure. So, like I said, I saw this when I was a really little kid, way too young to have watched this and traumatized my childhood. This is one of those movies I really wish I could see for the first time again, but as an older, like, you know, like a teenager maybe. Because I feel like, I'm losing my train of thought. This is one of those movies I wish I could experience for the first time again, is what I'm trying to say, but when I could comprehend it better. I think whether you like horror or not, or even whether you like this particular movie or not, you have to at least acknowledge that it's, I mean, as I brought this up earlier and then Jerry said the same words, but it's a masterclass in suspense. And, you know, budget filmmaking and everything. I mean, the way that they, you know, they all had to wear their own clothes, and the leaves were fake, and they spray painted them, and they had to blow them out and then go pick them back up again and then blow them out again. Like, and the stuff they had to do, you know, it was so simple, but I don't know. It's just one of the best movies ever. I'll never stop.
I'm willing to shoot Dre's main idea in the foot right now. And this is one of the movies that older is always better when it comes to Halloween. So
yeah,
that's out there. So, I mean, literally, if you're going to compare, like, Rob Zombie Halloween to 1978, clearly older is better. Always older is better.
Dead is better.
Okay, Stephen King lover. 1 to 5, what would you give the movie?
I'm sorry, I got interrupted.
Oh, no, you. That's all my fault.
Not by you.
Abby?
George, he just got home. I am going to give it 10 out of 5 scary jack-o'-lanterns. All the jack-o'-lanterns go to this movie. Number one in my heart forever.
Chance the Rapper, the floor is yours, sir.
As far as the summation, you know, Amanda definitely hit the nail on the head. I don't really think I could say anything that she hasn't said specifically, but as far as a rating, I'm going with fucking 6, count them, 6 shots, 6 shots out of 6, because I shot him 6 times!
Maths are hard.
You literally are a rat bastard son of a bitch. That was literally what I was going to do for my freaking rating.
Bye, Bob.
Asshole.
What's the matter, Bob? Can I get your goat? Can I get your ghost, Bob?
See anything you like? Yeah, that's like, I don't know if you... He see to strangle her with his 3-inch thick glasses on.
Right. I think that's why it went as bad as it did. Because she's all like, ah! Because she couldn't see shit, so he's all trying to just go by feel. He's like, fuck. Exactly. He's like, how the fuck am I going to get this goddamn thing? And then she tears the fucking thing off because she's strangled and, I don't know, decided she was cold. I don't know.
That head tilt used to haunt my nightmares.
Oh, dude, for real. I love that shit. Every time they would do that shit in any of those movies, I just always like, oh, shit, it's Michael motherfucking Myers.
Mm-hmm. I have a Ghost Bob bobblehead. It's Michael Ghost Bob with the glasses, and it's got a phone on the ground next to him with the cord.
That's awesome.
So, I mean, obviously Amanda and Chancey nailed everything good. There's lots of good stuff that you can say about the movie, but Amanda did a really good job of summing up the best parts of the movie with her overall review. So hats off to her for that. Damn it. I really wanted to go with 6 fucking times for my fucking rating. I'm a little bit bitter right now. I'm going to go with 15 out of 5 years that he sat and waited and waited and waited before he could unleash hell on Haddonfield, Illinois.
Or Pasadena, California, for the people who don't know.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I would say that was the greenest October on record.
Yeah. I know all these leaves.
I mean,
blowing all these leaves around, but yet the grass and everything is completely green. You see the palm tree in the background.
I'm not going to lie, it's not as green as the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie was, but, you know.
But you don't know when that's supposed to be taking place.
That's actually not true. It tells you at the very beginning of the movie, on the afternoon of August 18th, 1973.
And I wasn't referring to the green environment. I was referring to a different kind of green.
I don't get it.
I think he's referring to your fucking, your TCM2 review.
Oh.
Well, no, I was referring to the fact of what John Larroquette was paid to do the...
Oh, that too. Yeah, right.
For the movie. Because he was not paid in green paper.
Paid in something you wrap in paper.
He was paid in green and paper.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I'm surprised it took an hour and 10 minutes for us to get our first end of the episode.
I'm off my game today.
You did what?
She said she's off her game.
I'm off my game today.
Oh. That's a little bit understandable. You've had the flu all week long, so
fucking flu and broken bones and bruised up areas from a second fall. I'm just not doing great.
Man, so, it's almost like somebody saw that shit coming.
Freaking Iowan gypsy curses.
Your voodoo dolls are coming. This is one eye open.
I'm not scared of Shanna.
My daughter made a sandwich for turkey and mayo and cheese. She always loads her sandwiches up with the turkey, so I was like, okay, she'll do that for me. So she gave me like two pieces of turkey, this thick-ass piece of cheese, and a crap ton of mayo. So I'm eating a mayo and cheese sandwich. I won't complain.
The flashbacks to being poor and not having enough ingredients for a full-on sandwich.
I know, right?
She doesn't want to waste them on me. She wants it for herself.
I loved me a good old mustard and cheese sandwich.
I liked fried bologna.
Fried bologna was good. Yeah. I actually did. I used to do peanut butter and Miracle Whip. I know everybody says that, but it's a very thin layer of Miracle Whip, so you get the zip, and then it's all peanut butter.
I'm gonna hear it.
What do you mean? You're the one eating a fucking mayo sandwich over here.
No, peanut butter on it, loser.
It's peanut butter. It was good. It's delicious.
I agree. Not with mayo.
You've never tried it. How would you know?
Psychotic.
Well, technically, he said
Miracle Whip. Jury's out on that. Yeah, and I did. I did say Miracle Whip.
Fine. No Miracle Whip either.
But you got to try it at least once.
No.
Okay. So I'm going to put a pinhole in trying to gross out Amanda and say that this was definitely a lot of fun. And I promise the listeners, this is not the last time you will be hearing from your horror squad. We have talked about and discussed plans to examine this entire franchise, the entire Nightmare on Elm Street franchise. Can we take and put part two at the end with that hot garbage?
I agree to the entire Nightmare on Elm Street franchise.
You will. If I'm going to freaking sit through Resurrection, you can sit through freaking part two.
No way, dude.
Resurrection is way better than than Nightmare on Elm Street 2. Come on.
I mean, I even got to agree with that, dude, because like nobody talks shit to the main killer and gets away with it except for fucking Busta Rhymes.
Yeah.
For real, though.
Trick or treat, motherfucker.
Anyway. You don't get to be Michael Myers. I get to be Michael Myers. And could you imagine how confused that must have made him? He's like having an existential crisis in the moment. Like, and then he's all like, go out there and help her. And he's like, I'll go kill her. That's a good idea.
Either way you look at it. There will be lots more horror episodes coming your way from the Horror Squad. But as always, we have to thank the listeners for being here each and every episode. Thank you, Girl Casey, for commenting along and getting the discussion flowing early in the episode. Thank you, Tony and Harley as well, for commenting along. And everybody who will watch and listen at the same time. Co-host, do you have something coming up on the SIP list that the listeners need to be made aware of?
No. I am behind. So hopefully next week, episodes will be back. I've got two in the bank that are ready to release. And beyond that, I don't know what we're doing. I'm sure we'll be doing something special for, you know, Women's Month in March. But other than that, I got nothing planned.
Well, I mean, technically, I guess you are doing a SIP list next Friday with CJ.
Oh, yeah. That is correct.
I don't remember what it was he said you guys were discussing.
I already forgot.
Oh no, I remember. I remember because my loneliness is killing me.
Yeah, we're doing top five Britney Spears songs. That is correct.
I don't volunteer for that. Sorry episode. About the noise.
Since we already did Swiftie, which CJ's he won't call himself a Swiftie, but he's a Taylor Swift fan. But yeah, he loves Britney. So we're gonna talk Britney bitch, top five Britney songs, and maybe we'll talk about her book a little bit.
Nice. So where can the listeners find anything that they need to know about the SIP list as well?
You can find the SIP list everywhere you get your podcast listening fix. The top five podcast. We pick a topic. We rank our top five and shenanigans ensue. Normally drops every Thursday morning. I've been behind because of vacation. And of course now I'm fucking in bed dying with injury and sickness. It's like I've been cursed.
What? Who said curse? I didn't say shit. Jesus ain't got nothing to do with this place.
Good one. That was good.
Jesus, fix it.
Okay. But yeah, thanks. This was fun. I'm sorry I'm not quite up to par and not as amusing as I usually am, but I still had fun and I will talk Halloween all the time.
Yeah.
So maybe next time when we come back for our next Horror Squad meeting, we can venture into maybe a horror SIP libs just to introduce the fans who,
I'm always down for that.
Well, I mean, SIP libs are incredible, whether it's horror or whatever the subject may be, unless you're talking Nightmare on My Street.
Duh, that was the worst.
That was not a fun SIP libs episode, or SIP libs.
Yeah.
So it
took like 30 minutes.
Yeah, it was literally like 40 some freaking blanks to fill in, and we got like halfway done. And Amanda's like, we're still not even anywhere near done. So, Mr. Chance the Rapper, where can everybody find you on the socials and all of that goodness?
On Facebook, that's my first name right there. And then on Instagram and TikTok, it is the Red Eye Roundtable. And on Twitter X, it's Red Eye Table. You can find stuff on Spotify and YouTube under that Maniacal Music Musifications thing down there.
Nice.
It says it right there.
If you're going to look for it, you might want to look for Maniacal Music Musings, not Maniacal Music Musifications.
I know, but I knew that if I didn't say it, you would.
I was going to.
I knew somebody was, so I was going to beat you to the punch.
Maniacal Musical Musicings, that's what I say.
That's the one. But let's see. Either way,
Amanda and I love to mispronounce the last word in that title.
There she is, that fucking rake. Sorry. Sorry.
Oh, dude, that's good. Yeah, that's all I got for right now. Fucking, I'm sorry. I drew a whole ass blank on that. I says there she goes that goddamn break. I'm like, huh? Where the fuck did we get ice cream?
Oh, with all that said, as you guys all know, an evening at the movies drops each and every Wednesday morning. We are currently wrapping up live as we record this, wrapping up Black Cinema Month, and we will be deeply embedded in the movies that everybody should see once in their lifetime theme for a couple of months before we look at superheroes. And moving into the summer, we'll be discussing one of the greatest movie years of all time, being the year of 1984. We have some movies already set on the schedule. A guest participant has picked another movie to go on the schedule as well that I don't think Amanda has been made aware of yet, but would the guest picker like to let her know what he picked for his pick?
Is it the one that I think it is? Is it my favorite Christmas movie?
It is your favorite Christmas movie.
Oh, dude, Silent Night, Deadly Night, for sure.
Yes, love it.
So, Silent Night, Deadly Night, Footloose, Purple Rain, Beverly Hills Cop 4, only because we're not going back down the road of Beverly Hills Cop again yet on an evening at the movies. Ghostbusters, Gremlins, and The Karate Kid.
I was gonna say, where's Karate Kid?
it's sweeping the leg on Michael Myers.
Yeah, right.
So, definitely this was a lot of fun. I look forward to doing a lot more of this in the future. And again, thank you guys for being here. Thank you, Chansey. Thank you, Amanda. We're glad you are back, co-host. We missed you. It's been an awful lot of me recording and not having you here, but I digress. I'm glad you're back.
Sorry.
you were missed.
Thank you.
With all of that said, I hope you remember your line because the floor is yours.
Yes. Sorry. On the screen was the part where she stabs him in the neck with the knitting needle and he just drops. That's the one part of the movie that makes me laugh. He's just like, and then he just drops, like crumbles down into one piece. Anyway, thank you everybody for watching and listening and commenting. And we hope you all come back for an evening at the movies. Horror Squad out.